Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buchanani. Chris, how are you doing today, my friend?
Doing great, Jim. Always ready to talk Penn State football. Let's go.
Never a bad time to do that. And Chris, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun today. We're kind of like right in the middle of the off season, not a lot of news activity. I thought we would play a game called Fact or Fiction. I'm going to make a statement. You, sir, get to determine whether it's fact or fiction. Okay. Got the rules down. You okay with it?
Yeah, full disclosure to the audience, I don't know any of these in advance. I am hearing them when you're hearing them, and you are hearing me respond in real time. So let's do it.
Well, that's the way it's best. I don't want you to have the time to prepare for this. That's not what this is about. It's off the cuff. Let's get it started. I'm going to start with this one. Next year, quarterback Drew Aller will be a first-round pick in the NFL draft.
Okay. That is a good one, and I have to think about a couple of things. So first of all, there's the presumption, which is probably accurate, that after spending 3 years in college, he is going to make himself available for the draft. And then there's the question of does he or does he not become a first-round pick? Now, I think you and I talked a couple weeks ago, Jim, about whether or not you ever would have imagined when you were watching Bo Nix play for Auburn at Beaver Stadium that you were watching the 12th pick in the NFL draft, or when you watched Michael Penix playing against the Nittany Lions with Indiana that you were watching the 8th pick in the NFL draft. So I bring that up not just to filibuster and give myself more time to think about my answer, but also to illustrate how unbelievably unpredictable the draft quarterback market has become in the era of the rookie salary cap for the NFL. Once upon a time, you had to be incredibly judicious about investing a first-round pick in a quarterback because of the amount of money you had to commit to that player up front. And if you made a bad decision, like infamously the Rams did with Sam Bradford, it could cripple your salary cap and therefore your franchise for half a decade. Now, since there is a set salary level, it's tied directly to your draft position and the numbers are comparatively so much lower. I think teams are much more willing to take swings and, if necessary, multiple swings at the most important position early in the draft. And again, you know, the most infamous example of that probably is the Arizona Cardinals selecting Josh Rosen, figuring out after a year he wasn't the guy, and then selecting Kyler Murray the next year, number one overall. All of that is to say that maybe in past years, a quarterback who has some flaws in his game, like for sure Drew Aller will, even if he has a lights-out Joe Burrow-esque turnaround this season, there'll still be scrutiny of his tape against Michigan and Ohio State from 2023. There are going to be some questions around him as a quarterback. Nevertheless, he's got all the physical tools. NFL teams are going to look at Drew, and there is going to be a coach who believes, as long as he has a season that is, you know, I think even a marginal improvement over 2023, that they can coach him up and get a lot out of him. I don't know that he's going to be a top 10 pick, but I'm thinking this through, and after everything I just laid out, I'm going to say that is a fact.
You know what? I think it will be also. And here's something else that Drew Aller has going for him. And I often use the baseball pitcher analogy. And if you've got a pitcher who could throw 100 miles an hour, he gets drafted, Chris, because teams think we could teach them everything else. A quarterback at Drew Aller's size with his arm strength, he looks like he has all those physical tools to be an NFL quarterback. There'll be somebody who says, you know what, we could teach him the rest. And I think, and you bring up a lot of valid points. Again, rookie quarterbacks are attractive because the rookie salary now It's sustainable. I could build a much better team around that guy with that contract. I'm with you. I think as long as he has a respectable season, we will see him as a first-round pick next year. All right.
Here's the point of comparison. Do we all feel relatively comfortable saying that even though everyone was disappointed with the way he played in the big games last year, he already looks like a better college quarterback than Will Levis did at Kentucky? And, yes. I think the answer is yes. I think most people would agree. Will Levis was talked about as a top 10 quarterback prospect, seriously going right up into the day of the first round of that draft. Now, that didn't work out for him, but that's my point. If the evident flaws in Will Levis's game is the threshold to get into the first round conversation, I think it's completely reasonable to project that Drew is right there come next April.
And the what's also good about the comparison is, again, Will Levis was another one of those guys, big, strong kid, big, strong arm. That's the kind of thing. He looks like what an NFL quarterback should look like. All right, next up here, Chris, shifting gears quite a bit. Nick Singleton and Catron Allen will combine for over 2,000 rushing yards.
I am going to go fiction on that one, only because I think one of the calling cards of the Andy Kotelnicki offense, if I can project what it's going to look like this fall, is going to be spreading the ball around. And so I think you're going to see – now, all-purpose yards might be a different conversation, but I think they will probably fall just shy of that mark. I think they'll both have great seasons, but that's a big number, and I don't see it happening.
It is a big number, and I was the one who set the number, okay? So I was trying to set the number where I'm not sure which way you'll go, over or under, if you want to put it in those terms. But what I wonder, too, is a lot of times when we think of offensive coordinators and you think of them being creative, we think of it in the passing game. We think of it in, oh, they'll make use of the running backs, throwing them the ball. And I think that will happen, Chris. But I think you will also have a situation where this will be a pretty good defense that will get the ball back to the offense quite a bit. There's enough teams on the schedule that Penn State will dominate, will get leads, will run the ball. And I think you'll have more explosive plays running the ball. So I think it is possible. I'm not sure I'm ready to commit to it being fact, but I'm going to say they have a very good chance at it. All right.
Here's to steel man the opposing point real quickly, Jim, is to say, we've talked about this before. I do think you're going to see a lot of creativity in the offense. That's no shock to anyone who's been following Kotelnicki's career or listening to any of the offseason chatter coming out of the players. But I do think he's going to look to run the ball, and I think it'll be very much in the same sense that Joe Moorhead, who was very creative and wide open with his passing offense, was still a run-first guy at heart, running to set up the pass, as the old saying goes. I think Kotelnicki will prove to be the same. Both those kids are incredible backs, and I think they're both going to have very good seasons. So you think about the 2002 offense at Penn State, which started out, its calling card was a dynamic passing offense. You know, you had Zach Mills throwing to Bryant Johnson, a future first round pick, and Tony Johnson, and they were throwing the ball all over the yard a little bit more than you were used to seeing from a Paterno offense. So they had a nice counterbalance to the run, but then Larry Johnson just emerged as this stud. So I'm still going fiction on that, but if you want to argue fact, you just think about that dynamic offense Penn State had a little over two decades ago and say, can Nick Singleton plus Catron Allen equal Larry Johnson from 2002? I mean, it's not unreasonable to suggest that happens.
And by the way, I love that you brought up that year, because I think Larry Johnson is somehow incredibly forgotten among the running backs at Penn State and what he did in that year. It was incredible to watch. How about that Michigan State game? It was crazy. And it was such a fun team to watch. And the only thing I'll counter with, you talked about, using the running game to set up the passing game. I think now sometimes it's using the passing game to set up the running game. Convince people that, you know, we're willing and able to throw the ball on first down, my old pet peeve. And all of a sudden you will open things up for the running backs, especially someone so dynamic as Nick Singleton. And I don't think it, you know, by saying I think that they can rush for over 2,000 yards combined, that's not me saying they're going to be a grinded out offense. It's just me saying I think this offense could be that explosive that you could still get a lot of yards from the running game, Chris.
I appreciate the optimism, and it's May, so now's the time.
So I'm allowed. I won't be proven wrong for quite a while. All right. Here's the next one up. Staying off the offensive side of the ball, Tyler Warren will lead this team in catches.
Okay, so receptions. All right, not yardage.
Yes. Correct.
I am going to go fact on that one. I love Ty Warren as a player, love his game, love how he projects this year, and could not be more pessimistic about the wide receiver room at the moment. So until we are given voluminous evidence to the contrary, it's reasonable, again, to assume that that position is going to continue to underperform for Penn State. And when you've got a guy of Warren's ability, who has been with the program for so long, played so much college football, and already has a existing comfort level with your starting quarterback, tight end is the, you know, security blanket best friend of a quarterback in need of help. And again, I think it's reasonable to assume Drew Aller is going to be in need of help when looking to his wide receivers this season. So yeah, I'll go fact on that.
I agree with you on that. And I'll take it even a step further. I think every conversation about Andy Kotelnicki is about creating matchups that are attractive to you. And if you're a Tyler Warren with his size and his athleticism, and you talk about getting the tight end in motion, I think that's what you're going to do. You look at Tyler Warren and say, this guy, he's a mismatch waiting to happen somehow, some way. And if you're moving him around, you can create that. And I think Andy Kotelnicki is just going to say, this is what my offense is about. All right, Chris, that is it for quarter number one. I got a lot more fact or fiction questions coming up, so stay tuned for that. We've had such a great response to our F45 training and state college promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Well, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I am Jim Galante. We were having a fun show today. We're playing a game. We're playing a game of fact and fiction. I will,
Jim, let me cut you off.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like Neo in the Matrix here to write my own rules. I want to turn this around on you real quickly. You don't know this is coming. I'm going to give you, Jim, a fact or fiction that combines two from the last segment. Real quick, fact or fiction, Tyler Warren is a first-round NFL draft pick next April.
Boy, I think the only issue about him is the fact that he's a tight end, you know, and I don't know how many tight ends typically go first round in the NFL draft, but I am such a Tyler Warren guy, and maybe this is the blue and white glasses going on here, Chris. I'm going to say yes, because I think he can be such a weapon in the NFL game, and it's because like I talked about in the first segment, he creates mismatches. I like that about him. I also like Oh, I like the way he blocks. Just go get a replay of last year's Michigan State game. Watch Nick Singleton catch the pass and make a big play. Watch what Tyler Warren does. He puts his defender into the bench, okay? Clears him off the field. And by the way, he did that a couple more times in that game. Maybe it's overly optimistic, but I'm going to go yes. What do you say?
He does so many things well. He's a great locker room guy. He's going to test through the roof at the combine. And if we're right that he's going to be the receptions leader on the team, that is going to get him added attention. I think I'm going to have to go fiction, but I think it will be discussed. I think he'll for sure be drafted higher than Theo Johnson was this year. I think he'll be a day two pick, probably in the second round. But it wouldn't shock me to see him go right at the end of the first round. But I'll go fiction. Anyway, yeah, just wanted to run a little ambush on you, Jim.
I appreciate it. It's a great question. And I think the NFL draft, it's kind of like running backs, how they have been devalued. You know, it's like how do teams value tight ends? And like I said, I use the word weapon a lot in talking about a running back, a wide receiver. It's why I think Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, and there are some people who are very critical of it, and I understand the injury risks. But by using this downgrading the value of a running back as the reason why it was a poor investment by the Eagles, I look at him just like I look at those two wide receivers that they have. He's a weapon, Chris. And as an Eagles fan, I can't wait to see how they use that weapon.
You and me both, brother.
And that's why I describe Tyler Warren that way. He's a weapon to be used. All right, here we go. Next up, Ohio State will lose in the first or second round of the playoffs, and Ryan Day will lose his job.
Okay, so if Ohio State were to win the Big Ten, they would get a first round bye, right? So that for them to lose in the second round, they would have to lose their first playoff game, presuming they win the Big Ten, which at this point, they absolutely have to be considered the favorite to do. I don't care how good you think Oregon is going to be. If you don't have Ohio State as a favorite to win the conference this year, you're nuts. I mean, another team could do it, but they have to be realistically considered the favorite. I am going to go fiction, I guess, since you gave me an and instead of an and or. I think they will win through, whether it's via bye in the first round or not, the first two rounds of the playoffs. But I do not think they will be the national champions, and I do think Ryan Day will lose his job as a result. Or maybe he'll leave. There'll be like a kind of quasi-mutual parting of the ways. But I think the stakes are too astronomically high in Columbus right now. I think the tension has ratcheted way up. And again, Jim, we'll talk about this multiple times here as the season approaches, but it's timely because LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson yesterday just put out a tell-all podcast about all the inside baseball of the Chip Kelly era in the Philadelphia Eagles organization. And it just confirmed for me what I think has been evident for years, that Chip Kelly is just a misanthropic weirdo. And I think the introduction of that combustible personality element into the absolute pressure cooker of Ohio State and their $13 million championship roster could explode very, very easily. So, yeah, I'm expecting something to go wrong at some point in Columbus this year.
Well, I'll give you the other element that scares me if I'm an Ohio State fan, and that's their quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. It's always, over the years, it's been so good. And we saw last year, Kyle McCord, you know, so highly rated coming out of high school. I really don't know how good or bad he is, but he definitely was not elite last year. And yeah, he gets shown the door, okay? And I don't, they have five guys, five quarterbacks there. I'm amazed that they're still there, that none of them have entered the portal. But none of them really has seized the job. So do they have the guy at quarterback for them? And I think that could be another element to this, Chris, that could be their undoing.
Very possible. I mean, the luxury for Ohio State is that they could easily win 10 games without having the guy. And so all they need to do is figure out the other two, and they've got time to do it and ample talent in the quarterback room. But yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern if you're a Buckeye fan.
And that was the issue, you know, last year. Hey, it was they will out talent most teams on their schedule. There is zero doubt about that. But if they're going to be challenged like they have been by Michigan, what happens then? We might see that against Oregon this year. They've got Oregon and Michigan. And the fact is, I haven't seen their schedule. I should take a look at it. But I'm assuming this is terrible because they do play Penn State. But if you make the assumption they win all 10 of the other games but maybe lose to Oregon and Michigan, or maybe it's not Michigan, maybe it's Penn State. They have two losses. They'll make the playoffs, but that's going to be a disappointing year in Columbus. They are
again,
going to
absent
be
a
very
national
fascinating.
Title, Ryan Day must beat Penn State and Michigan this year. If that guy loses to Michigan again and does anything other than end the year with confetti falling on that team, he is donezo, 100%. Just ask again, John Cooper how that works out.
That is going to make them the fun team to watch. Okay, going to really shift gears for you on this one. Cooper Cousins will be a starter on the offensive line by the end of the season.
You know, I am at this point, Jim, I'm going to go fiction on that. I don't feel great about it because I know the staff loves him. And I think you could kind of sense it with both the number and the caliber of snaps that he got in the spring game to pair with the recruiting profile and the hype that surrounded him, the word coming out of practice and whatnot. As I've said before, though, I know James, like most football coaches, absolutely fetishizes experience, loves guys who have played a lot of snaps and been in the program and seen a lot of different things. And as you know, I like Nick Dawkins as a player a lot. I think because Cooper Cousins is, you know, the new shiny object, he's garnered all of the attention. I think people are drastically, in some cases, undervaluing how solid of a player that Dawkins will be. And so I expect him to play well early on. And if he, as a veteran, plays well, I don't see the staff will see any reason to supplant him with a true freshman. So, and I think there are other options at the guard positions too, where Cooper will play. He'll be in a rotation. He's going to see the field a lot this year, but I don't think he'll be a quote unquote starter by season's end.
I think that he has multiple opportunities though. Yes, there's a center position, but even if you're a believer in Nick Dawkins being the starter through the season, I thought it was interesting that they had Cooper Cousins starting at right guard for the white team in the spring game. Now, I know there were some injuries, some other issues, but this was a true freshman, not just a true freshman. This was a high school senior. This was a high school senior that they chose to put out there with what they were qualified as the first team for the spring game. I thought that spoke volumes for him and what the coaches.
Yeah, and
as
I'm thinking about it now, I will say you go back a little bit, about a decade plus, Steph Wisniewski got on the field as a freshman for Penn State because he was an elite talent who belonged with that group. He was one of the five best in the offensive line room and played on some really good Penn State offensive lines. So, you know, it's not without precedent. Like I said, if you're good enough and you belong there, the best player should play. The more I think back on that and the more I listen to you talk, I waver a little bit, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with fiction. They love veterans. They love Wormley and J.B. Nelson and Juané, and, you know, what are they going to do with Nolan Rucci? I just think, again, I think he will play. He's not going to be a regular starter. That's my gut.
If everything goes
prediction as, sure to go wrong.
If everything goes as planned, the answer is fiction, okay? There's no doubt about that. But very seldom does the offensive line go as planned.
Yeah, no, stop, man. I am, again, it's May. I am way too superstitious to start forecasting injuries or anything bad happening. I understand. I know how the world works, okay? But, like, again, it's this weekend notwithstanding, the sun is shining in Happy Valley, okay? We got the whole summer in front of us. I don't want to think about O-linemen getting hurt.
Well, I think
everything is going to go as planned, Jim. Everything.
See, I picture not even like, okay, here's a season ending injury. I see a player getting nicked up, maybe miss a game. Cooper Cousins goes out there, and it's like, oh, okay.
This action. Sure. Yeah, could be.
Exactly. All right, that's it for quarter number two. When we come back, Chris will explain who Wally Pipp is.
We've had such a great response to our F45 training and state college promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are playing a game of fact or fiction. I make the statement to Chris. He needs to decide whether that statement is fictitious or it is fact. And when we closed up segment number two, Chris, we're talking about the offensive line. We were talking about Cooper Cousins. My statement to you was, would he be a starter by the end of the year? You called it fiction, which it's understandable. If things go as planned, he won't start. You got the veterans there. He will get some playing time, but will not be a starter if everything goes as planned. I don't mean to jinx the team. I think just by the nature of the position, offensive line, guys get nicked up. They sure might just miss a game. And I put forth to you the idea that Cooper Cousins, he might get in the lineup a game because somebody got nicked up and they won't be able to take him out. And you made what reference, Chris?
I referenced Wally Pipp, the former first baseman for the New York Yankees, who missed a game with injury and was replaced by Lou Gehrig. And that was the end of Wally Pipp as the starting first baseman for the New York Yankees. So you miss a game for injury or, you know, you're out sick and your replacement does a bang-up job in relief, and sometimes the opportunity never comes back.
And Lou Gehrig, by the way, then set the record for consecutive games played. So he never correct came out after he was put in there. And how long ago did this happen, Chris?
A very long time ago. Maybe Drew Bledsoe would be a more appropriate and timely with the roast of Tom Brady example.
It was approximately 100 years ago. It was in the 20s. So for the youngsters, Chris just saved you the work of having to Google it. That's who Wally Pipp is. All right.
By the way, these are great, Jim, because I find myself second guessing my answer on almost every single one of them. So these you picked some good scenarios.
Well, good. I'm glad that's the case. That was the goal of it. Now I'm really going to go off the plantation for this one, Chris. Players will be paid a salary by the 2025 season.
Fact. I'll be very surprised if they drag this process out to 2026. I think there are many, many signs, not the least of which is that every athletic director and head coach in Division I hates their life and job right now. I think that is going to be fast-tracked, and you're going to see that for not this season, obviously, but the following.
I hope it happens, Chris. What bothers me, or what I think is a hindrance to it, is these people in charge cannot get out of their own way, okay? Remember what it took them to expand to the 12-team playoff. They just kept tripping over themselves trying to get it done. And now they start to introduce these intermediate steps, like, well, we'll take the collective responsibilities and bring those in-house. Then they talk in terms of, well, they won't be paid, but the schools can do, be the sponsor of, they could be like the companies who are paying the players for name, image, and likeness. For example, on the season ticket itself, we'll put the image of a player on and we'll pay him for that. Why do they even talk about those intermediate steps? They all know what's coming. Just get there. Just get there, because all those intermediate steps do is they lead to more cheating. They lead to more court cases where they're going to lose, because they always do lose, Chris. So I'm with you. It should happen. I'm just not so sure that it will happen, Chris.
Yeah, I understand your point. Like, for sure, kind of like the point you're making is also the answer to the question you asked about why this intermediate step. Because really, when you look under the hood of college sports, there's a lot of cat herding going on. Like, there's not a ton of vertical integration. The one reason why the NFL can like move so nimbly is they've got a very strong commissioner, a great league office, and 32 owners who, you know, they may bicker amongst themselves over details, but when it comes to the big picture, they're largely aligned. College football, I mean, you're talking about disparate stakeholders who are all over the country and have different views about what college sports is and how it should be run, and they all have their own internal institutional politics to play around. It's very hard to turn the battleship of college sports. And another reason why I think 2025 is a realistic target date to see some kind of revenue sharing really ramp up is because I think the smartest and most influential minds in the Big Ten and the SEC have been laying the groundwork for this for multiple years. Like, I think the infrastructure is way further along behind the scenes than we may think it is. And I think it's just going to be a very short time now before you start to see it coming out into the public view.
I really, really hope you're right on that one, Chris. All right, here's one for you. James Franklin will win a national championship at Penn State.
Fiction.
There was not even hesitation there.
Yeah, no, I could not have less confidence in the prospect of that. It's not, to be fair, it's not completely a commentary on James Franklin. It's about the state of the sport and, you know, what the quote unquote ceiling is for Penn State. It's a lot of different factors, but that would surprise me greatly.
Well, I think we got to also remember just how difficult it is to win a national championship and how
extraordinarily difficult.
How many coaches are still in the college game, Chris, who have won a national championship? Remember, Nick Saban's out of the game.
Jim
Harbaugh's now in the NFL. Jimbo Fisher is out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to forget somebody probably, but the only name, I mean, Dabo's the only guy who's coming to mind.
Kirby Smart.
Kirby Smart, right. So obviously I overlooked him. So I got Kirby Smart and Dabo Swinney, and that's all I can think of.
What's funny is I forgot Dabo Swinney. I was ready to say there was one, and it was Kirby Smart. Who else is there? Is there anyone else?
I mean, you just have Saban's retired, Harbaugh's in the NFL, Jimbo's collecting lots and lots of money for doing a whole lot of nothing. The same can be said for Ed Orgeron. So yeah, man, that's I don't know what's his face from Auburn. I don't know. He might be coaching like some Division III school or something. I don't know, but yeah, your point is well taken. And that's my point. As a Penn State fan, I would love to see a national championship. I think it's actually harder now than ever to actually win one on the field. And because of the way the sport is changing, and I know this is going to get some folks dander up, depending on a variety of other factors, I'm probably okay with that. I would love for Penn State to continue to be, it's important for me that Penn State continue to be a top 15 program. If we don't win a national championship, I don't view the head coach as a failure based on that data point alone.
I don't think you can. And the fact is, it is harder, I believe, to win a national championship now. And people say, how could you say that? You know, 50 years ago, it was still the same. There's one national, well, sometimes they had co-national champions, but the numbers were the same, the number of teams. Why is it more difficult? Well, I think it's more difficult to have a team like Joe's Penn State teams that were like on a four-year cycle where they would build to a point of being potentially a national champion, where they said every player over so many years had at least played for a national championship. Because there are certain teams that have elevated their game and their style of play and who they are, you know, like Alabama, like Georgia. Now, will that change for Alabama now that Nick Saban's gone? Perhaps. But we're seeing like Ohio State right now getting to the point where they're saying, okay, we're going to make the all-out commitment, NIL money. We are going all in this year to win it. It's kind of like the, again, using the baseball analogy, there are certain years that teams say, we're all in this year. So we do the free agent thing over the winter, come the trade deadline, we trade young minor league players for that, you know, player to play for us for 2 months just to get us over the top and win the World Series this year. Next year, be damned. And I think we're going to see some of that go on, which is not Penn State style. We're seeing that right now from Ohio State. I'm not sure, you know, Penn State's ever going to fall into that category.
All right. Well, and to relate to the current question to the previous, alongside, you know, revenue sharing, salary, however you want to describe it, I think there are going to, accompanying that, are going to be more serious and more ironclad commitments on behalf of the players. So when we're talking about Penn State's ability to compete for a national championship, that's under the current system, which I don't expect to exist long term. And it's so hard to forecast what the sport might look like after all the dust settles. You know, again, all of that might change. But based on what we know now, I'm very solidly in the fiction column on that one.
And again, part of it is just the math equation, okay? There's 100 teams, and maybe they narrow it down because of the, you know, Super League or whatever they're going to put this elite group at. And that's still going to be how many teams? 80, 70, 60?
Even if you're talking about the best of the best and you say there's 35, 40, in some ways that actually makes the math harder, not easier, because you're talking about concentrating the talent in a few super duper programs.
Right. And I believe there will always be those teams that will do the extra. I talked with Landon this week, and he was talking about his conversations with Julian Fleming about how things work at Ohio State. And he's like, Jim, they don't go to class, okay? They take all remote classes. They spend the day, you know, at the football facility. It's more like an NFL team than anything else. You're always going to have teams that are that way. Chris, that's it for quarter number three. Stick around. I've got more questions for Chris in quarter four.
We've had such a great response to our F45 training and state college promotion over the last couple weeks. they've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Bucanani. I'm Jim Galante. We're playing a game of fact or fiction with Chris. I make the statement. Chris will tell you whether that statement is fact or is it fiction. Let's start with this one, Chris, for the fourth quarter. Penn State will host a playoff game this year.
Fiction.
You're
Jim,
breaking my
you could
heart,
ask
Chris.
Penn State will play in a playoff game this year, and I would call it fiction.
Really? You don't think they'll make the playoffs this year?
I do not.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's going to lead me to the next logical question to that. That means they have to lose. I would assume they need to lose three games to not make the playoffs, correct?
Correct.
Is that your prediction? Are you predicting then a 9-3 season, and where are those three losses going to come?
Yeah. Now I have to add the disclaimer. This is not my official I do not officially predict a record this far. My official record prediction is when we do the final segment of the first obligatory pregame show of the fall, that is my official record prediction. So all of these are all like off the record. These are preseason games. They don't count in the standings. But I haven't moved off of where I was on January 2nd. So I've got Penn State at 9-3, yes.
What games do you have them losing?
Okay, I've got college football is a sport of traditions, and one of the great traditions is Penn State losing to Ohio State. So that, of course, is a loss. Again, I'm a football history guy. You know that, Jim? Penn State has never once defeated USC on the West Coast, either in the regular season or in the Rose Bowl. And so I've got a loss on the road at USC. Those West Coast trips are tough. I think USC's offense is going to be explosive, and for as good as Penn State's defense is going to be, I think it'll be able to take advantage of and of some opportunities. And again, just West Coast trip, I've got that loss. And then, you know, I just look at the remainder of the schedule. The opener at West Virginia is going to be a very, very difficult game. If that ends up as a primetime game, as people are expecting, it's going to be a very hostile environment against a good veteran quarterback and a team that desperately, desperately wants to make a statement that they can beat Penn State in their building. So Penn State is going to have to be ready to bring the energy level on the road to open the season. That one is going to be tough. I don't think Wisconsin is going to be great this year. I think they're going to be better than they were last year. And it once again, like Camp Randall Stadium is a very difficult environment. Now, Penn State's done quite well at Camp Randall of late. But I think that's another game. UCLA, I don't think, is going to be a challenging opponent for Penn State in Beaver Stadium. But they're a brand name, right? I think, again, Washington, we don't know what to expect from Washington. I actually think they could be bad. But you look at that stretch of games where they've got to, you know, go at USC, at Wisconsin. Then they got to play Washington. Then they got to play Ohio State. Just when I look at a team that in 2024 is like, yeah, we feel pretty good about our whole roster, except all of our wide receivers who might all be crappy. Like that doesn't give me I'm not overflowing with confidence, right? In a team that makes that statement, they're probably going to start the year ranked in the top 10, which again is just an amazing statement to make about a preseason top 10 team. I see two losses for sure, and I can easily envision a third. And, you know, there is also the other thing that, you know, in the back of my head is the belief that if, like, there are four playoff spots, Penn State will finish fifth. If there are 12, we'll finish 13th. If there's 38 playoff spots, Penn State will be number 39 in the nation. So, I just don't see it.
Well, what you also have to think about is there may be 12 playoff spots, but they're not going to go to the top 12 teams.
Right. Yeah, it's really the top 11, right?
At least, and you have, I think it's the top four or five conference winners go. What that means is obviously the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference winners will get one of those games as a bye. Then it's like the conference winners from the ACC, the Big 12, and a Group of Five team. Now, the Group of Five team could be ranked 25th in the country. One could argue that the Big 12 or the ACC winner may be outside the top 12 too, Chris.
Well, that's a fair point. Yeah, especially when you talk about the Big 12. Yeah, but anyway, the point's well taken. And I don't like making this prediction, and I know it's probably going to tick some people off, and I probably sound like a negative jerk, frankly. But, you know, I always call them like I see them. The one good thing is that Penn State traditionally seems to do better when expectations are low in the preseason versus high. And, you can ask, how could you call expectations low for a team you just said might be ranked in the top 10 preseason? When you compare the hype and the energy around this upcoming year versus last year, I think it is practically night and day. And so at least I think for the people closest to home, the bar of expectations is way lower going into 24 than it was 2023.
And I think it's a very different schedule this year. Okay, we're talking playoffs. I mentioned what the rules are. And so essentially an ACC, a Big 12, and a Group of Five team have to make the playoffs, okay? That's three of them. The other nine teams in the 12 playoff things will come from the Big Ten or the South and or the Southeast Conference. Fact or fiction?
Okay, you explain one thing to me. If Notre Dame makes it, I'm going to say fiction because I think one of either Notre Dame or the non-ACC champion between Florida State and Clemson makes it. So I think one of those two scenarios, but then the rest. So it's fiction, but it's close.
What I think is going to be interesting with it is how they, as I said, this will be the first year that I think the playoff committee will earn their money. Okay, up till now, It was so easy to pick the top four teams. I've explained it multiple times on here how you did it. I could have done it in 5 minutes. No need to have a national meeting, a dozen people. But this year, they're going to have to do some tiebreakers. Do you take if it's a two-loss Big Ten or Southeast Conference team against a two-loss ACC team, how do you rule? Or could you possibly even put a three-loss Southeast Conference team in ahead of a two-loss ACC team?
Oh, I think that if it doesn't happen this year, it will happen in short order.
What you also have is the Big Ten championship game and the Southeast Conference championship game. Remember, that's no longer cross division. It's the first and second place teams play. If you're that second place team with a loss or two already going into that game, obviously, since you're second place, you can lose that extra game. So how do you judge that? How do you judge a three-loss team that made it to the Southeast Conference championship game versus a two-loss Florida State or Clemson from the ACC?
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of where you could see potentially a three-loss SEC or Big Ten team get in over an ACC team with fewer losses. It's hard to imagine the Big 12 putting more than their conference champion in But again, like if I just say I take one of those open slots, and I think there's a very good chance it belongs to either Notre Dame or the loser of the ACC championship game.
Okay. Here's one I'm not sure you're going to like, but I'm putting it out there for you anyway.
Do it.
Keandre Lambert-Smith leaving is addition by subtraction.
I'm going to call that fact, because I think the opportunities that will open up for other players. Again, I talk about being pessimistic about the wide receiver room. It's just, you know, the evidence of what our eyes have told us. On the other hand, I was so confident that somewhere the talent that I know does exist in that room was going to step up to the plate before last season. That possibility is still out there. And I think the snaps that will become available from the departure of Dre actually increase the chance that somebody does take advantage of the opportunity, because my feeling about Lambert Smith at this point is that we have seen enough of him over his career at Penn State that we knew what he was and what he wasn't. And the ceiling he was at was not going to make an appreciable difference for Penn State trying to get to the next level. So my personal feeling is I would rather see one of the younger guys, less featured guys, get his crack at it. And I expect that will be an upgrade. So, yeah, I'll go fact.
I think so, too. And I think that guy, the obvious pick is Caden Saunders. I think he's the guy that will step into that void. It'll be interesting to see. Okay, Chris, got one last question for you, and I'm going to break my fact-fiction trend, okay? This one's going to be a multiple-choice question for you.
Go.
Who is the first member of this coaching staff who will get a head coaching job?
Oh man, I can pick any of the guys on the current staff.
Any of them. First, that's why I said I made it a multiple choice.
I'm going to go Anthony Poindexter, Jim. Andy Kotelnicki is maybe the most obvious choice, but he just got here. I think, you know, maybe we'll take a couple of years. I think Anthony Poindexter could be in the conversation for a head coaching job after this offseason. I don't expect either one of the coordinators to leave after this year. So I'm going to go Poindexter. I mean, he was purportedly very close to the UVA job and was brought up this past season as maybe a head coaching candidate. I think he's the guy.
You know what? Great minds thinking alike there, Chris. That's the name that I had also, because I think the coordinators, I think Tom Allen needs a couple more years to reset. Kotelnicki, I think the same thing. Poindexter,
I think Tom Allen is thrilled to not have to deal with all the stuff that goes along with being a head coach.
I do too.
And I use the word stuff because I know this is going to go on the radio. It's actually something else.
I think you're right. I think you hit it correctly there. All right, Chris, it was a fun show. I appreciate all your answers. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training and State College promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.